And we are speaking with Chuck Lohman. He is a candidate for the Idaho Legislature District 1 House Seat B. It's kind of a long title there, Chuck. Thank you for taking time to speak with us.
Yeah, no problem, Chris. Thanks for having me.
So I always like to start these things out with an introduction to the voters. Tell people a bit about yourself, your background, how you wound up here in North Idaho.
Absolutely. Well, so my life has always been dedicated to service. It started young in the Cub Scouts and then Boy Scouts, as I'm an Eagle Scout, and that kind of defined my formation as a young person and continued. I was a Christian missionary all over the world in some very dangerous and hard places, and then that continued after 9/11 when I volunteered to be an Army chaplain, and I served 39 months in combat operations supporting tactical operating units in Iraq and Afghanistan. So that's kind of my brief history. We came to Idaho in 2019. I've got my undergraduate in wildlife management from the University of Idaho, and my wife was born and raised in Boise, and so that was a natural fit for us after my military service to come back to Idaho and raise our family here.
Where did you grow up yourself?
I grew up in Northern Nevada, so Ely and then Reno, and came to Idaho in the 90s. Got my undergraduate there at the University of Idaho.
How did you discover Sandpoint specifically?
Well, I landed a job initially with the Idaho Fish and Game working on the Ponderay Wildlife Management Area. And the problem with any of our state agencies is it's very competitive, and you've got to be able to move. And with four kids, all of whom were in some various stage of schooling, we had already moved enough in the military. We moved like every 2 years. I wasn't gonna subject them to moving again and again and again in chasing that dream, so to speak. I served pastorally here for a few years, and now I run a construction business that's growing,
Okay, well, whatever possessed you to run for legislature?
Yeah, well, last time it was...
You ran in 2024.
I ran in 2024, and again, it stems from this desire to serve our community. And one of the things that continues me to press on in this is kind of stems from my role as an Army chaplain, because oftentimes as an Army chaplain, my fight was to tell soldiers and leaders that they're doing it wrong, and to give clear, concise guidance as to how they can do their job better. And so that's one of the reasons probably why I didn't fit as being the endorsed candidate for the Central Committee here, because I saw things that I did not like, and I told them why I did not like their stances, and that continues to be the case. Mm-hmm. I see things in my opponent that he's more concerned about representing the Idaho Freedom Caucus than he is about representing our constituents. I see claims that he made to be a strict constitutionalist, but ideas and things that are being pressed by the Freedom Caucus is going directly against First Amendment, Sixth Amendment, Tenth Amendment protections in the Constitution. Mm-hmm. And so...
We'll clarify, the Freedom Foundation, Idaho Freedom Foundation, it's a conservative lobbying organization. It has a lot of influence on legislators.
Well, this is different than the Idaho Freedom Foundation.
Oh, it is. Okay.
So the Idaho Freedom Caucus is a caucus of, they would dub themselves true conservatives. And so they are dedicated to cutting spending, cutting government, and in ways that I see don't uphold our governmental values. So they would be tied or closely related to the Idaho Freedom Caucus or the Idaho Freedom Foundation. The Idaho Freedom Foundation being the lobbying organization, the Idaho Freedom Caucus, and Cornell's voting record. Every positive rating on the Freedom Caucus bills, he voted for.
Mm-hmm. And Cornell Razor, he's the incumbent.
Yes, he's the incumbent, so he's my opponent. And so I just see that there's conflicts even in his own stances that I would stand against if you look at the bills and what their actual second and third order consequences are.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's obviously a issue, a motivating issue for you to run. Are there any others that you'd like to mention off the top of your head?
Other issues? Well, absolutely. Our central committee is so dead set against property taxes that they lobbied against our fire protection districts to get the levies they needed to maintain their coverage. Mm-hmm. Because those fire protection levies failed, our protection ratings went from a 10 to a 4, and many homeowners, to include my neighbor, 80-year-old widow, who she lost her homeowner's insurance, and she can't afford new insurance because the rates are so expensive. And so, again, that's a consequence of an ideology that would say we're dead set against property taxes. But when your fire protection districts don't have another option to raise the revenues they need to operate, that creates a problem. And now we have residents who are can't find insurance, will likely have to sell at a reduced rate because their home can't be insured, mm-hmm. right? All these are those second and third order consequences that ideology does not serve.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, let's explore that a little bit more on the whole question of the legislature and versus local control and decision-making. So there are a number of cases where the state legislature has mandated policy on issues that override local control. Mm-hmm. In this most recent session, for instance, flying of flags on any private, on any public property that affected Bonner's Ferry specifically, because Bonner's Ferry has historically flown a Canadian flag because we're so close to Canada and there's a historical tie there. The legislature did come back and make an amendment on that that allows Bonner's Ferry to fly the Canadian flag, but it does. They went ahead and passed that particular bill, and there are other public entities that can't fly flags of different sorts that their local constituents might want. So the question is, when a controversial issue arises in our local community, such as, say, library content or facility usage, should the solution be crafted by local boards and residents, or should the legislature pass uniform laws that mandate how all Idaho communities must handle these situations?
Well, I've been a firm proponent of local control in these issues, and what that means is we push decision-making processes down to the lowest level. So that's something that the Army taught me, is that we empower the private at the bottom to be able to achieve the mission. And so they need to have the tools necessary to achieve that mission. And so for our local governing issues, we may face a problem that Salmon doesn't have, or that Idaho Falls doesn't have, and vice versa. And doesn't make sense for a law that is applicable in Idaho Falls to be something that we have to follow here, that we have to devote time and energy and resources, especially in a constrained environment, to something that's not our problem. The other piece is that we have locally elected officials who oversee these various institutions, and it's upon us to be involved, to be educated, to see what the issue is, to lobby them to change in a way that reflects the values of our community. But if we look to Boise to solve all our problems, the problem then becomes 40% of our legislature, both House and Senate, are represented by Ada and Canyon County. Those values aren't going to represent our values in Bonner and Boundary County. And so we need a good legislature will push those decision-making processes down to the lowest level practicable.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's talk about some of the specific issues and bills that came before the legislature in this most recent session that just ended there at the end of March. And the biggest thing that came out of this particular legislature was a series of bills that were enacted for budget cuts in order to keep our balanced budget. But they are reducing funding for the most state agencies and departments by and across the board 4% this year. It'll be a 5% reduction beginning fiscal year 2027, which actually starts in July. Mm-hmm. One bill that affected the budgets of many agencies was House Bill 559, which conforms retroactively to the federal tax changes from the One Big Beautiful Bill Act that the Trump administration got signed into law. So I guess the question would be, would you have supported or opposed that particular House Bill 559 when it came up for decision making there in the legislature?
Well, that bill makes it, I think, easier for our tax professionals to be going across the board. It reduces conflicts in our taxation policies with the federal government. That bill, I probably likely would have voted for. I think the bigger issue with the Big Beautiful Bill is that being a state that is 60% federal land, and Americans have very clearly said our federal lands are not for sale. The right option then is for the American people to support those states that are bearing the burden of our federally protected public lands. And so that looks like payment in lieu of taxes, that looks like SRS funds. And we probably should be asking more from our federal government in this regard, especially as environmental laws have affected the ability of our local economies to generate revenue from our natural resources. So there's a big push to reject federal funding with the aims of reducing our overall taxes. But in the same breath, like, the American people want us to keep these lands. So the American people need to pay for these lands. And so I would vote for, in favor of, budgets that accept those federal funds because we're bearing the burden of stewarding our public land.
Mm-hmm. Well, that raises a more general question. There has been some movement within Idaho that Idaho should assume control of federal Forest Service and BLM lands in the state. And if you're... The question would be, are you in favor of that or not? And if so, how can we ensure that the financial costs of managing those lands, mm-hmm. specifically wildfire suppression and road maintenance, don't require the expenditure of extra state funds?
Yeah. So I'm against the acquisition of federally managed lands, particularly because of those budget issues. So if we look at the Idaho Department of Lands, they spend $35 an acre a year just to manage our public, or the state endowment lands. So just by scaling that up to the millions of acres of federal land in Idaho, that budget cost alone would be more than what people are willing to pay. And then the fire cost, if you have a really bad fire year, like kind of what we're looking at this year with the really dry winters we've had, that could bankrupt our rainy day fund overnight. And so, again, this is an issue of, if the American people want us to steward this land, the American people should pay for that. And that's through PILT and SRS and fighting the fires. And so, yeah, I definitely would be against acquiring federal lands.
Okay, let's dive back into a couple bills that came up in the legislature this past session. House Bill 913, which calls for the state to implement work requirements for adults that are enrolled in Medicaid expansion in order to receive benefits. It did pass. Where would you have stood on that one?
I think that's a very real requirement for that, especially for able-bodied working persons. The issue that I see that makes this probably not as good of a bill as maybe we think it is because when you start requiring more and more administrative burdens to justify the expenditure, it makes that program less and less effective. So if you're trying to like prevent $5 in fraud, but you're spending $100 to do it, that doesn't make sense that we should do that. So Medicare funding and Medicaid funding, and maybe I'll shift a little bit on this in my experience with that. As I worked pastorally in the area, I worked with some folks with some significant behavioral health challenges. So obsessive compulsive disorders, borderline personality disorders, and those folks are like at the very high end of need for Medicare and Medicaid programs mm-hmm. because they can't hold a job, their treatment and care is very expensive. So on the one hand, it's very hard to treat them. On the other hand, for the provider, so let's say the provider has a 1 hour session with this client, they would spend 2 to 3 hours filling out the paperwork to justify the funding for that client. And so for that behavioral health provider, they don't want to take on this client who is the highest need client in our community because the funding process is so overburdened to justify that payment that they can't do it. They can't justify taking that person on as a client. So what we have is the people with the highest needs in our community aren't getting care because we're not compensating the provider either rightly for their time, which isn't just 1 hour for the session, but it's 4 hours. So they spend their half their day on one client and they're only getting paid for 1 hour. Mm-hmm. So we've got to look at those programs and the administrative burden that we put on them. And our schools are the same way. We put way too much administrative burdens on our schools because we want accountability. And that just creates an inefficiency and it makes the programs less effective.
Mm-hmm. Well, since you bring up schools.
Sure.
We'll pivot on that one.
Okay.
And this question is about school funding and vouchers. So Idaho did pass a what you could call a voucher program last year to use public monies to help families and kids get private educations. And there's a debate among Idaho Republicans about this and expanding vouchers for mm-hmm. private education versus maintaining those funds for our public school system. So the question would be, you know, more generally, do you support funding, putting more funding into school vouchers? And how do you balance the desire for parental choice in education with our constitutional mandate here in Idaho to maintain a uniform public school system?
Yeah, so again, that goes to our constitutional mandate. Like, we need to maintain and establish a uniform, thorough, free public education system. And so House Bill 93, the state Supreme Court upheld that it's valid. My argument would be, because I know a number of families who homeschool their children and they do a phenomenal job homeschooling their kids. I've worked with other families doing natural resource education and phenomenal kids, and I'm not gonna dissuade what they do with their kids. In the same breath, though, I also see that they this is when they were taking advantage of the TREC program, Idaho TREC program, which pays them money, and they would have to take tests and do certain things, but I would see them spend their money on backcountry ski equipment, enrolling their kids in a travel volleyball team, which costs $1,000 per kid, buying 3D printers. And one family I just spoke with recently, they're like, yeah, we got $1,900. And it's like, I guess we better spend it on something. And to me, that tells me that they don't actually need that money to do what they're doing. They like getting it. And yeah, I'd love to get government money for doing what I'm doing already. But what our public education system is there for is to provide education for those one who can't do it for themselves, but also to expand opportunities so that our form of republic can sustain itself through an educated, populace that our kids are educated. And I substitute with the high needs program in our elementary schools, and these are some of the kids that have the worst behavioral and mental health issues, and I do it because I care, because I want to serve them, and I'm consistent, and that's what they need in their lives. And so to be able to provide a program like that specifically tailored to the needs of those kids, you've got to fund it. And the problem is we have this big push to defund government programs, but to maintain things like the Beacon program or to LPO High School.
The alternative high school.
The alternative high school here. Mm-hmm. That's going to require money. Mm-hmm. It's going to be expensive to provide those specific programs for those kids. Now, there are some kids, absolutely, who don't fit in our education model. And for those, I'd be like, yeah, if they don't fit in House Bill 93 funds could help them get to a school where they do fit and it's meeting their needs, absolutely. Like, I'm for that. But it's for the run-of-the-mill family who doesn't actually need the money, but they're taking it just because they can. I would question, really, is this program actually necessary? Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, we've got time for maybe one or two more questions here. Saw one bill that came up that had a local impact here was House Bill 583. It restricts local government's ability to impose rules that single out short-term rentals for additional requirements. And in Sandpoint, we had a policy that there couldn't be more than 35 of these short-term rentals. We're talking about like Airbnb or VRBO rentals in town, with the objective there being that we got to maintain housing for our local people, not just these vacation rentals. How would you have come down on House Bill 583 if you're familiar with that?
I think I probably would have voted against that. I think, especially in our housing market, where it's to get an entry-level home is nearly impossible. Partly is because of our zoning regulations. Folks want to keep everything rural residential, 5 acres. And to even purchase that land, you're looking at $300,000. And to build a modest home on that, you're looking at another $300,000. So you're $600,000 in to build a home. And your normal kind of working class person, whether it's a police officer or a nurse or a school teacher, you're looking at more than half of their income going just to their housing payment. Mm-hmm. And that to me doesn't pass muster. So part of that is we're shooting ourselves in the foot. Like we're not going for high density and medium density zoning so that we can actually increase the volume of homes on the market, which would then bring overall costs down. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, Chuck Lohman, candidate for House Seat B. How will people get in touch with you if they want to learn more about
sure.
you and decide how they're going
to I've got my website, chucklohman.com, and then I've also got, you can call me, 208-494-2084. That comes right to my phone. I'd love to chat with you. I'd love to come to your neighborhood and meet your neighbors. Just reach out. I'm completely responsive. Chuck@chucklohman.com. That's my email. So any of those ways, I'd love to get in touch with you and talk about these issues more.
Again, Chuck Lohman, thank you so much for coming in to speak with us.
Sure. Thanks, Chris.